Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C., it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio. QLPOR, as it's widely known, features a bevy of poets, spoken word artists, and live poetry readings with best-selling authors. Your host is Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Good evening, everyone. I am Michael Anthony Ingram. Welcome to the program. I am delighted to welcome internationally acclaimed poet Jennifer M. Gnutz to the program. She lives in Germany, but tonight she will join us from her place of birth, Jamaica, one of the most beautiful Caribbean islands on earth. As a writer, her inspiration comes from a variety of sources, such as her vivid imagination, her personal experiences, seeing words, word combinations on paper, hearing words or phrases, watching events in the world unfold around her, and observing life in its fullest. Please visit her website and read more information about her extremely fascinating life story. I would like to say welcome Jennifer to the program, but we're experiencing some technical problems, so please hold on. Hang in there. Hopefully, here she is. Hold on. Let's see. Good evening, Jennifer.
Hi, Michael. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Good.
How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me. Sorry, there were little technical difficulties,
yes.
But now I got in.
Fantastic. I am so pleased. I am so happy.
So
because usually when there are technical problems, that's the end of the line, but not tonight.
Yeah.
We would not be denied. Welcome. You know, I stated that you live in Germany. What city in Germany do you live in?
I live in Hamburg, which is in the north of Germany.
All right,
it's about 2.5 hours away from Berlin.
All right. Very nice. Thank you. Thank you. Well, let's begin this poetic journey.
Yes.
Jennifer, what is poetry?
Poetry are sentiments put to words in a rhythmic manner, which deals with emotions of love, spirituality, death, problems, everything packed into one. You're just exploding your mind with whatever it is that comes in there, and you're putting it out on paper. Or in this modern world, you're putting it writing it immediately directly into your cell phone in the notes.
Yes. Exploding your mind with words. Flesh that out for me. Tell me more about that, the exploding part of it.
Well, I write on all themes. My mind makes click on different themes, and the words just sort of explode out of my mind onto paper. You know, I write about death, problems, like I'm walking in the street and I see a mad person, and then, you know, I wonder, what made that person become crazy? What made that person become homeless? You know, and then I sort of imagine myself speaking to the person. And for instance, I have a poem dealing with exactly that experience, because I always feel sad when I see poor people around, and I always wish I had the money, enough money to sort of help them by putting, you know, like establishing an old people's home or a homeless home. You know, I just want to help people, but I don't have the funds, so I help in the little way I can by either, if I'm walking past the store and I see a beggar, then I will just, and I have the time, I will go inside and I'll buy a sandwich and a drink and then give it to the beggar, because I know I'm getting my salary at the end of the month.
Yes. You know, it's funny, when I reread your biography on your website, then you made the statement that I do what I can within my means.
Exactly.
That stood out to me. So, and again, I just read it. So for you to say that, since we've been talking, I just read that. I can understand. I think that's such an honest assessment of life, to do what we can within our means. I'd like
exactly.
that so much.
Exactly.
Like
if more
so
people
much.
Would do that, then more people would be helped and less people would be homeless.
Yes, I agree. I agree. So based on what you know about the world, based on what you've experienced, is poetry important?
Well, I would say poetry is important in that it's a quick way of getting experiences, of getting problems of society out there in the open. Because not everybody is going to pick up a book and read, but if there's an event and you're reciting a poem, then someone in the audience might pick up something from the poem, might get, inspired by whatever you say in the poem to act in a positive manner towards his fellow human. So poetry is important.
Mm. You know, there's some people out there who believe that poetry is dying. What is your take on it?
It's definitely not dying, because if you look around, everywhere there are different poetry events cropping up, which are well attended. Young people now are getting more into poetry. You even have some seniors like myself, I'll be 70 next month, who are into poetry. So it's definitely not dying. And you have a lot more online Zoom events happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's where we actually met.
Yes, it is.
One of these Zoom events. So
that's true.
It's definitely not
that's
dying.
True. You know, I'm already happy that you're here. I'm just filled with so much good emotion. Please share with me an early experience where you learned that poetic language had power.
Ooh, wow. I can't really put my finger on it, but when my father was murdered shortly before my 20th birthday, and I never cried because I was still in a state of shock. The tears came later, and when the tears came, I wrote nonstop 13 poems about my impressions of him, my life with him, my thoughts of him, and everything. So that for me is just one experience, I would say. I know poetry. And then there are times I've read poems to other people and they have told me, who are you? Because of the power that's coming out in your poems. Mm. You know, I can only describe myself as fun-loving, but a very deep, deep, deep and spiritual person, even though I write erotic poems.
Yes. Well, let me ask this question. So you said you wrote 13 poems. Was there something special about that particular number of poems? 13?
No. Those 13 just came. It just flowed. I wrote more later about him. So the number is now much more than 13.
Okay. I do understand. Jennifer, please share a poem.
Okay. Since we started on the theme of my father, I'll do that first. You know, children don't always get along with their parents, and my father was super strict, so I always wanted to have my freedom. And when he was murdered, you know, it sort of shocked me and said, that's not the kind of freedom I wanted. So this poem is titled Reflections. God, I pray because I know you care. I pray because I love you. I pray because I know you will make my dreams come true. But God, one dream was a mistake, that one ugly, stupid, selfish, childish, ungrateful dream. I know I often wished he'd go to hell. But God, I didn't really want the devil to come and take him away from me. It was just childish retaliation, and I was asleep, you see. God, in future, please grant not all my wishes, unless they be what you want for me. God, why was my father murdered? Why, God, why? God, did my father die that I might live? Why, God, why? End of poem.
Wow. You know, again, when I read your story, it stayed with me. From the beginnings of your tale until all the years later.
Yeah.
So what do you write about, Jennifer? I know you write erotic poetry. I know you write about life. What are some of the predominant themes of your work?
The predominant things are problems in society. Problems in society about the children suffering, old people suffering, blind people, you know, homeless, and things happening not only in my immediate surroundings, but things happening other places. Like I have a poem also about someone climbing a mountain, you know, because you have all these people. Recently there was this person who also died there while climbing the mountain, you know. So I'm saying, I have this poem that also deals with, you know, everybody wants to reach the top of the mountain, but the mountain doesn't really want them to be climbing it.
That is true. You don't often think about it from that perspective. That's true. You are trampling on the mountain's home. So you're right. You know, all great writers have great writing influences. Who are some of yours? What makes them special in your eyes?
I don't have influences because I write my own style, but there are poets I like. You know, Jamaica has a lot of famous poets. Louis Bennett Coverley. We have Muta Baruka. We have Claude McKay, who the British have actually claimed him as their own, but he was actually born in Jamaica.
Yes.
You know, you also have Edward Waugh, you know, and you have Yesus Afari, who is one of the more popular ones at the moment, you know. And I grew up actually on Shakespeare and William Wordsworth, you know, and Byron and Keats and those. But
really?
My poems have nothing to deal with them. My poems deal with reality.
Yes. Reality. What is reality, Jennifer? What is it? Explain it to me, please. You're a wise person. Explain it to me.
Oh, I'm not that wise.
Please.
To me, reality is everything I see happening around. For instance, the problems we're having in Jamaica. It's a reality that prices are rising. The minimum wage in my country is only 13,000 Jamaican dollars a week. And you can't fill your fridge on the half of that. So the result is you have crime rising, you have people not eating properly, and yet you need to eat properly to remain healthy.
Yes,
you
know.
Yes,
you
have
cost
of living. You have cost of living raising, you know, with rent being high. So how can someone who earns like $40 or $50 a month, how can they survive when rentals prices, it's difficult for you to find something that's even a room under $30,000 a month.
Oh, wow.
You know, but the Jamaican people still, you know, they still smile. They love their music, and the music is what keeps them happy.
Right. You know, how does a poem begin for you, Jennifer? With an idea, a form, or an image?
It comes in different ways. I was at an exhibition recently, and there was a title of a painting. It wasn't a painting that really made a click in my head. It was the title of the poem. But I will do that poem for you at the very end.
Okay.
You know, other times there are just situations where I look at the fact that a lot of guys go to bed with girls, or girls go to bed with guys, and they're not yet married.
Yes.
Yeah. And yet these teenagers or these men regard the woman as being cheap, and then they go and marry someone else after.
Yes.
You know,
true.
So what I'm saying is men shouldn't call women cheap or whores unless they are actually going to bed with someone who's working as a prostitute, because just as though the men want to go to bed with the woman without being married to her, then, you know, the women also say the man is just as easy.
Yes, true. That's true.
and that inspired me to write a poem.
And you're going to share that one at the end?
No. The one about the painting, I'll share at the end. This one I can share whenever you're ready for me to do another poem.
All right. Share it right now. I want to hear it. Right.
Okay. It is titled Tactics. You sized me up lusting. I smiled inwardly, waiting. My cool expression did not betray me, but I too wanted you. Your yearning gave your legs courage. They brought you to me way up close. You speeched me down, While your heart loaned your lips its voice, I felt your excitement. Inhaled in sweet ecstasy, your heavenly scent, I allowed you to court me. As I finally gave in, giving you my whole, you began sticking out your chest like a proud cock, going around boasting to all your friends, stating you captured me easily. Bullshit. You see, I too had eyed you lusting, wanting. Oh yes, I too wanted to possess you. Now I've got you. Ha! End of poem.
Oh, and you are right. It is a two-way street. It does take two to tango.
Exactly. Therefore, men should stop branding women.
Yes, yes, yes. Let's imagine for a moment that a poem is like a cake. All right?
Okay.
All right. What are the ingredients that go into making that cake that's a poem? What goes into it for you?
Observation, that which you see,
mm-hmm.
that you can put into words, that which you feel, that you can also put into words, and that which you desire, which you can also put into words. That which makes you fair, you can also put into words. That which makes you happy or glow, you can also put into words. Communicating with God, you can also put into words.
Mm-hmm.
So practically everything can be put into words. You just have to mix it around to get mm-hmm. the right recipe in terms mm-hmm. of placing it line by line to mm-hmm. make it into a poem.
All right. So when you create a poem, who leads, you or the poem?
The poem.
Tell me more.
Because I say the poem leads because I just write without being able to control it. There are times it's just a phrase that comes into my head and I will put down the phrase and then go back to it another day if nothing else is flowing. I don't force myself to search for the words to write a poem. Mm-hmm. There are other times an idea comes into my head or a word and I just write nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes 1 page, 2 page, 3 page, 4 page, 5 pages.
Wow.
I just let it flow out.
Mm-hmm.
So the poem controls me, not I control the poem.
All right.
I will just go back and edit it probably, or maybe say, oh, it would sound better if I added something else to it.
Mm-hmm. 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 So I'm enjoying you. I'm so happy. I'm so happy. You just don't
thank
know.
You. I'm happy
I'm so
to
happy.
Make you happy.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Now, when you think about writing a poem, how would you classify your ability to write? Is it a creative gift or a creative art? What do you think?
It's a God-given gift.
Talk to me. Tell me more.
It's a God-given gift because I mm-hmm. feel that God is the one who leads me to write.
Okay.
You know, I grew up without a mother. My
yes.
father was a businessman, so I grew up in boarding schools, or he paid for me to live privately with other people. The only
mm-hmm.
person I could really communicate with as a friend was God, because my father made one thing. He made sure that we went to church on Sundays. And if you didn't get out of the bed early enough, you'd be coming into the room and shouting and say, get your out of the bed, you know, and
yes.
go to church.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, God and my father have been the two main influences in my life.
Now, I can't remember. Now, were you an only child?
No, but my father was married once. His wife died childless of cancer.
Okay, yes.
And so when his girlfriends told him that they were pregnant, he took over the financial responsibility, but he never lived with a woman again. So
okay.
I never had a mother figure growing up.
Okay, I understand.
And in prep school, I found myself treating the younger ones as though I would have wanted to be treated. So I'm always sort of looking out for younger ones and giving them the love that I never got from a mother.
I understand. You know, again, your story is so striking. I mean, have you written about it in book form? I mean,
I started an autobiography, but at the moment it's only in the draft pages, and it's only just a few pages that I've written so far.
All right. Well, again, like I said, again, you have lived a life. I guess we all live lives.
Yeah, my life has been ups and downs, but, you know, my father always said, smile and, you know, don't wait on people to make you happy. You've got to make yourself happy.
Yeah, it's so true. Well, it's almost like we're in a private conversation, but that's so true.
You know, so I try to find my joy in life. You know, you get depressed a moment, but depression is something that doesn't stay. You've got to make sure it doesn't stay. There are so many people at the moment who are suffering from depression. You know, so many people committing suicide. It's very, very sad, particularly when it's teenagers or young kids.
Yes. You know, the world we live in, and I share this every time in every program, but 400 guests, I guess, almost. But there's the good, the bad, the ugly, as well as the indifferent, Jennifer. You've heard me make this statement. What do you view as being the role of a poet in modern day society? What is our role? What are we here for?
Well, I definitely would not say that we are there to guide the world. What I'll say is that we are there to inform the world about what is happening and to try to touch the hearts of the people so that they will look at things maybe differently or they will sort of, you know, try to do better within their lives. Maybe become a bit more spiritual, maybe become a bit more helpful, you know, maybe find joy in their lives when reading about through the poems or hearing through the poems, you know, about the lives of the poets or the story in a poem to know, wait a minute, you don't have to put up with this BS. You can sort of, you know, just move on with your life and find your own happiness.
Well, with that in mind, do you have a particular audience in mind when you write, an ideal reader or listener? Talk to me.
No, I don't think about that. I simply write what comes out of my head.
With that in mind, please.
But if I am presenting my poems before a live audience, then I carefully select what I think I would want to present on that particular day.
Okay, I understand. Share another piece.
Okay, this one deals with something I mentioned before about me reaching out to the home to an insane homeless person. It's titled Intruding Upon Your Isolation. In your eyes, a smile. I saw it flash by. On your forehead, a frown. Your brows knit, your ears twitch, your lips defiantly poised. Where are you? Do you even hear me when I speak? Can you comprehend my words, or do they sound garbled nonsense? Your eyes point to mine, yet they seem blank, so bleak. Do you even see me? Where are your thoughts? What do you see inside your head? What do you feel so isolated in your stead? Do you sleep upon a bed at night or curl like a cat at nights out on the street when your roaming empty eyes get weary and deadbeat? When or what do you ever drink or eat? Standing akimbo, your eyes nomadic, your chest heaving, your breath racing, your spent up energy from pacing. Feet tapping the ground, but there's no music around to dance to. Or were you playing a song, a sweet lullaby, your mama's voice stored inside your now jumbled head, sung long before you journeyed into your isolated world. Have you ever thought to return? Can you direct your thoughts to here and now? I saw it. I heard it. Am I getting through to you? Memories pouring in? You just took a long, long sigh. Where are you? Sitting, sobbing, rocking your body, hugging your body tightly, frightfully, shaking your head, murmuring the incomprehensible. Enclosed in your isolation, I know you need help, but I need your help to help you. Who are you? Where are you? Who or what do you fear? Who or what sent you deep down inside, way up there? Boy.
Oh, you know, there is just something about your voice. That's what struck me that time when I first heard you share your work several months ago.
Yeah.
What is the relationship, do you believe, that's between your speaking voice and your written voice? Are they one and the same, or are they different somehow?
When I speak what I write, I try to put some emotions on it. That's the only difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there's something else. I've heard over 400 voices. And in addition to the emotion, I can't put my finger on it, Jennifer. It's very powerful.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you.
What else do you think it might be, in addition to the emotion?
Maybe it's my inner self.
Okay.
Pouring itself out through the poems.
That could be the case. That could be it. Because one of the questions that I ask people is that they usually say that you can look to comedians, artists, musicians, and poets to find a quality that emerges naturally from them when they're sharing. And that's what I'm getting from, I'm sensing from you. There's this, that inner voice that's coming out.
Yeah, this other me.
That, yes. See, I'm good at what I do, Jennifer. That's why that's why they pay me the big bucks. Because it's that other you.
Yeah. That other me only shows itself when I'm on the dance floor or when I'm doing my poems.
Yes, yes. Yes, I'm like that too. You know, my story is that whenever I share my work, I feel like when I'm in the middle of it, there's no one else in the world that can hurt me, stop me, get in my way or anything when I'm in my work. But when I'm when I finish the work, that's when the vulnerability sets in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what did I say? What did I do? I mean, what will people think about me now? Mm-hmm. But when I'm in the middle of it, God's in control. And I don't care what you think. I just don't.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I feel the same way.
Yeah, I thought you did. I thought you did. Now, has any of your poems that you've written ever humbled or frightened you?
Yes. But I just can't pinpoint any of them right now. There's one that I, yes, there's one I wrote, again, about my father called Soliloquy. That's a very long one. It deals with the way he treated our mothers, us, and about the way he died. You know, and when after I read it, you know, it's really made me sort of question myself. Wait a minute, you know, do we have a love-hate relationship or is it just a love affair? Because I knew I was totally afraid of him.
Yes, yes.
I've only feared two persons in my life, my father and my elder brother.
Because
my elder brother used to beat me up when I was a child.
Okay. All right.
he doesn't remember it, but he was the one feeling the pain. The one who feels the pain remember the pain, not the one giving.
That is so true. I had a conversation with my sister recently about something that I'm the elder brother that she said I did to her when we were growing up. Of
okay,
course, I didn't
see?
Remember.
Exactly.
But she was
exactly.
still mad.
No. Oh, no, I'm not mad. I'm not mad at my brother.
Obviously, it's funny. No, I might be right. She was still mad. She was still mad. Please share another poem.
Okay. This is a romantic poem.
Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Titled, Journey to Your Mind. Let me journey. Let me journey to your mind, honey. Only then can I tell you if you are really meant to be mine. Good looks alone is not enough for me to judge someone by. Personality and a good mind are what really gets me eye. So first I must journey to a hidden place that truly reveals who and what you are. Do let me journey to your mind. Only then can I tell if you were really meant to be mine. Let me journey to your mind. I love you deeply. I cannot tell you that, not yet. I need you badly. I cannot reveal all that, not yet. When may I journey to your mind? When will you unlock the door? When will you let me in? I need to know what goes on in there. I need to know, I just must know, if you're the one for me to share my life with. I do so want to share myself, all my love with you. I've opened up all my doors, but you are still a mystery. I gave you me. Should I not have given all? Does your holding back mean the beginning of my fall? Give me even just a little glance. It will reveal to me if there is the remotest chance. Locking me out is neither loving nor kind. Do let me journey to your mind. End of poem.
You know, writing poetry and sharing poetry are two very different things. What made you decide to write and share your work?
Well, there's no reason for me to write. It just came. I actually started writing verses or composing songs when I was around 7 years old. My elder brother, Patrick, and I slept in the same bed. And, you know, children are being sent to bed at 7 o'clock in the night, but the kids are not really sleepy. But they have to go. So there was a street light coming in onto our bed. And then one night, my brother said, let's sing pop songs. You know, in those days, in the 50s, it was really, in the early 60s, in Jamaica, there were a lot of British and American pop songs, you know, Cliff Richard and, you know, Everly Brothers, Righteous Brothers and all these people. So we would sing all those songs we knew. And then one night we sang all the songs we knew and we couldn't fall asleep. And then my brother just said, let's make up our own songs. So we started making up our own, you know, little rubbish. You know, my baby has brown pants, my baby has brown eyes, my baby this and my baby that, because those were the lyrics that my baby was always in all those pop songs. And then one night, my lyrics actually made sense, sounded like a real song, you know. So from then, I've been just writing lyrics into notebooks, you know. And I still have some of those original notebooks from the late 60s, 67 onwards.
Wow.
And then in school, you know, the teachers always let you write essays and poetry. So that's when I started writing prose without a melody with it. Because when I compose a song, the melody comes automatically with the lyrics. I can't separate it. That's a gift.
Okay.
So the prose then started coming actually during school in the form of the teachers, you know, telling us to write poems on this. And then I just never stopped.
Mm-hmm.
But I got more into it in the 70s. And then more and more. And then I've never stopped writing. Even since I've been here, I've been in Jamaica now since the end of May.
Yes.
And I plan on being here for a year because I'm now retired. And since I've been here, I've written a few poems too. And three of them were actually inspired by paintings I saw at the art exhibition.
Really? Tell us about this art exhibition.
I do two of those towards the end.
Okay, great, because I want to hear more about it.
Oh, there was art. There is a Cecil Cooper, who is a famous Jamaican painter, and he also taught painting. And his foundation had an opening ceremony in the middle of June where a lot of his proteges, who are now professionals in their own right, one of them is actually a professor in Massachusetts at the university, you know, they lent some of their poems to this exhibition. And I walked around through the exhibition, and there was just something that just touched me, you know, made a click. And so then a few days later, I wrote a few poems, and some of them.
Well, what do you think makes poets different from other people?
I don't think we're different.
You don't think so?
Well, we're not different from other. Okay then. The only thing in that we're different, I suppose, is that we write whatever we see, we write whatever we feel, we write whatever we think. I can flick through a dictionary, for instance, and a word will make a click in my head, and that will automatically start me writing a poem. You know, I can be talking to you, and you see a phrase or a word. That can all make me, for instance, in my book, the poems I've read so far are in my book. I have an erotic poem book titled The Shower. And someone who read it said to me, I would love it if a woman could write an erotic poem about something similar to what you wrote about The Shower. The Shower was not written about anyone in particular. It was just written about situations. And a few days later, I wrote a poem, an erotic poem, and sent it to him. He was neither my lover nor my close friend, and yet just the word he said that he would love it if someone would immortalize him in his in a poem. And the word immortalize made a click in my head. And I wrote a 10-minute poem.
Wow. So here's a question for you.
That's how my brain works.
Well, here's a question for you as an erotic writer of poetry, and I've asked this a couple of times over the years. What sex is poetry?
What sex is poetry? Never heard of that before. It doesn't have any sex.
You don't think so?
No, no. Erotic is between man and woman, or in these days, between the other kinds.
Right, right, right.
You know, so... Erotic poems deal with sex. It deals with passion. You know, it doesn't have to be explicit, but the passion must be felt.
Okay.
When you're reading
this is fascinating to me. I want to know everything.
Okay, I'll do an erotic one later.
Okay, great. Great.
If I may, but not the long one.
Okay, all right.
That would take up too much time of your show.
All right, then, not a problem.
Well, you want another one now?
Yes, please.
Okay, but this one is a social theme. Brutality.
Okay.
So many centuries have come and gone, yet crimes, prejudice, and wars keep going on and on and on. But... we want to wake up one day to a new day, to a really new day. One day we want to read the newspaper without getting angry, without regretting that we had learned the ABC. One day we want to watch the TV without needing to flick the remote control or wanting to break it, upset, disgusted by the suffering, the brutality we see. One day we want to listen to the radio without wishing we were deaf, being shocked, saddened, outraged by the news we hear. One day we want to look around us without being depressed, totally afraid of our fellow man, without wishing we were illiterate, blind, deaf, never born, or simply dead. One day we want to wake up to a new day, to a really new day, full of love, free of crimes, free of prejudice, and free of wars. Maybe one day soon or in centuries to come, we may awake to that lovely new day one day. End of poem.
Wow. Would you read that one again?
Certainly.
Yes, please.
You know, it was inspired by me being sometimes afraid to walk the streets.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
sure.
Me seeing some of those scenes that they show on TV, you know, or being shocked by what I hear on the radio. Sometimes I wish the television stations just wouldn't put certain happenings for everybody to see, or warn us that something is going to be shown, so that if there are kids watching the TV, the parents can sort of switch the channel or send the kids to another room.
Yeah, I agree.
Brutality. So many centuries have come and gone, yet crimes, prejudice, and wars keep going on and on and on. But we want to wake up one day to a new day, to a really new day. One day we want to read the newspaper without getting angry, without regretting that we had learned the ABC. One day we want to watch the TV without needing to flick the remote control or wanting to break it, upset, disgusted by the suffering, the brutality we see. One day we want to listen to the radio without wishing we were deaf, being shocked, saddened, outraged by the news we hear. One day we want to look around us without being depressed, totally afraid of our fellow man, without wishing we were illiterate, blind, deaf, never born, or simply dead. One day we want to wake up to a new day, to a really new day, full of love, free of crimes, free of prejudice, and free of wars. Maybe one day soon, or in centuries to come, we may awake to that lovely new day, one day. End of poem.
Wow.
That's what I wish for myself and everybody, but I know it won't happen in my lifetime, sadly.
Yes, yes, well, I know. You know, when I listen to you share your work, you really, really make me think, and I love that. I love that because it makes, for me, the questions that I ask different because I pull on different information. I pull on the thoughts that I hear, the words that I hear. And I really appreciate you for that because tonight I've got a new question that I'm going to start asking people. Is poetry genderless?
Yes.
And it goes back to my question when I asked earlier about what sex is poetry.
No sex.
I guess I don't mean from the physicality part of it, but just is. So you make me think, Jennifer, and I love it because is poetry genderless? Is it sexless? I'm gonna have to invite you back for part two because you because when you make me think of new stuff, oh, I knew you'd be a special guest.
Oh, thank you.
Yes,
I'm honored.
Really did. I'm not sure whether you're gaining anything from it, but Lord knows I am.
Oh, yes, I am.
Thank you. What is the hardest and what's the easiest and then the most difficult part of the writing process for you? Writing poetry.
Wow. Well, I would say the hardest part is when I get an idea, but it doesn't flow immediately. That's the hardest part.
Mm-hmm.
So then I just go back to it a few days later, and if it still doesn't flow, then I go back to it. There's some poems that I write all in one go, and there are a few where it doesn't flow immediately, so I just write, leave it, go back again, and see if I get an idea and write. You know, so there are a few poems that I've been that I've done in three stages, but most of them usually flow.
Okay. So when you think about writing poetry, what about the editing part of it? You know, some people are really sticklers around editing, but others are more relaxed.
I am the relaxed type.
Tell me more about being relaxed in terms of writing poetry.
Well, I read it, I look at it, and then I say if I like it. And then I just say, if I like it, then I say, okay, can I add something to it to make it even a bit more stronger, to make it have a little bit more information that, you know, would make it sound a bit more, sort of give it a little bit more spice, so to speak. And then I might look at the grammar and then see or look at the punctuation. And most of the times I just say, okay, the punctuation is not important for me right now. Important is just that I get the idea on paper. And then the punctuation can come later before I send it to somebody or before I put it on my Instagram.
So knowing what you know about the world, your lived experiences, is writing a poem letting your guard down or building a wall?
Well, it's definitely letting a guard down in my erotic poems and in my political poems, because then I don't care what anyone thinks when I write or when I write my spiritual poems. I know not everybody believes in the God of the Bible.
Yes.
You have those who believe in Buddha, in Sinti, in Kali, and those other Indian gods, you know. So, and there are those who prefer to think of other things. But so I don't really care about that, you know, what they think. You know, if they listen to my spiritual poems, then they can just in their mind cross out the word God and put in whatever they want. But it would be good if they sort of got motivated to think of the Bible, you know, because whether or not you believe in the God of the Bible, reading it does do something to your mind. It can give you some form of peace. It gives me a form of peace. You know, there are lots of things I see in the Bible when I read it that I don't understand why that happened, you know, or how can that happen. But there are other parts of the Bible that I read and I feel at peace with it. You know, I don't like the thing of all these wars that were going on in the Bible, you know. But at the same time, there are other parts of it, you know, that you say, okay, it sort of eases my mind. The Bible is a very contradictory book.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Now, you've traveled sharing your work all over. Do you try to be original when you share different pieces, or are you, or do you prefer to deliver what your audience wants?
No. I deliver what I write. I deliver what's in my mind. But if someone, you know, there are times I will ask the public, do you want to listen to something spiritual, something romantic, something about friendship, or something about social issues, or something about erotic?
Okay.
And then I will give them what they say they want.
Is there one that you prefer to share? One type?
Well, no, but there I do have a favorite poem about my grandparents.
All right. Would you share it?
Okay, just a few seconds. You know, my grandmother was towards the end of her life. They were in their 90s. She was paralyzed. My grandfather was totally blind. And whenever I visited them, I just felt soft in the heart when I saw him sitting beside her bedside, holding her hand and talking to her. He couldn't see her, you know. They can't get, you know, sort of get up and hug each other and, you know, sort of dance with each other as before. And, you know, so like a naughty little thought came into my mind. It's a pity that they're still so much in love and they can't have sex. So this naughty little thought made me write a poem, and I'm going to do it in two languages. For those who understand, your listeners who understand German, I'll do it in German and then I'll translate it. Verliebte Alte, Wie feige Soldaten unsere Energien sind desertiert. Du kannst mich nicht hochhalten und ich kann es nicht hochkriegen. Also lass uns nur küssen und miteinander umfummeln. Denk an den Spaß wir hatten, als wir beide jung und verliebt waren. Ah, it's titled Old Love. Like cowardly, this is my grandfather telling my grandmother he's impotent. Like cowardly soldiers, our energies have deserted. You can't bear me up, nor can I keep it up. So let's just kiss and fondle each other's bundle. Think of the fun we had when young. Ah. End of poem.
Okay. You know, as I said earlier, there's something about you that just stands out to me. My father is blind.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother died a couple of years ago, about 2 years ago now. And I remember when she was in hospice, he was sitting in one chair beside her, and I was sitting across from them. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, he can't see her. Mm-hmm. I took
similar
a picture of it.
Experience.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. See, Jennifer, I resonate with you, my friend. I resonate with you. That's why you were supposed to be with me tonight. You were supposed to be with me tonight.
Yeah.
I said to myself, it's funny, I shared this picture with one of my sisters a couple of months ago. He was in the chair, but he couldn't see her.
Right, look on my website again. There's a picture of them on my website.
No, really?
With him sitting beside her.
Yes. Oh, wow. Come on, seriously?
Yes, on my website, there's a picture of my grandparents.
Wow.
After the interview, take a look at them.
I will do that. I will do that.
You know, you wish there are certain people you wish would live forever.
Yes.
And those two are people I wish would live forever.
I can understand that. Wow. Take a brief break, Jennifer, and we'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
We are back. I am Michael Anthony Ingram. I am here with Jennifer M. Granatz. Jennifer, please share a poem.
This one is for all the men. It's titled The Canvas. My eyes, feeling our harmony, led my hand over the canvas, which, like a boomerang, gave me your masculine body. The erotic radiance in your magnetic brown eyes, piercing so deeply into my soul, touching my heart so intensely that the hot blood led my fingers as if hypnotized, dapping, tapping over the canvas, recreating you like an Adonis, my masterpiece. That's how my lovesick eyes saw you as they laid their vision of your reflection into my hand, guiding my fingers slowly, lovingly, carefully, tenderly over your godly body, spread eagle on the canvas, naked as God created you, the very picture, the epitome of the perfect man. That's how I see you. That's how I painted you, my masterpiece. End of poem.
Beautiful. Beautiful. If you could tell your younger writing self anything, what would it be?
That's difficult. I would say then maybe I would tell my younger self that I should have started writing many, many more poems back then.
Mm-hmm.
Because the majority of the poems started in the 70s and continued to today. But it would have been nice if I had also done some, a lot more, when I was a teenager. But when I was a teenager, I was mostly concentrating on love songs, lyrics for songs.
Yes.
Rather than serious poetry. Serious,
you know,
themes, I should say.
Well, I've got to invite you back for part two, because we've reached that part of the show that I view as being my personal favorite part of the show, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
As being a mini poetry concert. This is an opportunity for you to share three or four of your works back to back, no interruption from me. Jennifer, you're on the stage.
Okay, thank you very much. My poem is titled Unjust Punishment. Growing up in the Caribbean, as blacks in the Caribbean or blacks in the Western Hemisphere, we all know that we, let's just say 99% of us, did not come directly from Africa the way we would have wanted to, but that we were enslaved, packed like sardines on ships, and forced to labor as slaves. This poem is titled Unjust Punishment. As the pain soars, heart sends tears, anger roars, hate grows. Powerful black limbs receive blows upon blows, heavy, flesh-cutting, stinging, cruel blows. He doesn't dare allow his face to show. He doesn't want his heart to grow full of pity. He doesn't want his victim, his once fondly treated slave, to know that he'd rather not torture him. So Bakra Mass's tears flow hidden inside, because his stubborn brain silently shouts, set an example must be set. Your overseer, your slaves must feel, must fear your power. Akramasa thus orders to take it further. Skin stretches, limbs torn, as the expensive giant, silent, martyred, proud slave finally dies. The master, head high, marches away. Inwardly, he bitterly cries upon killing his favorite field slave. An example had to be set, so he consoles himself, so he justifies the unjust punishment. After that epic poem, to lighten it up a bit, this poem is titled Coming On. You are coming on to me, though we both know you are not free. Are you a gigolo, frustrated, a sex addict, or what? Why do you want to make her cry, bring pain to her heart, sorrowful tears to her eyes, cheating on her, telling her cruel lies, telling me sweet lies? Were I weak enough to allow you to get closer to me, I am sure you would not remain for eternity loving just me. Would you not steal anxiously away during your lunch break, lying on any surface, leaning against any wall, and join quickies till I fall? And then you call the next one to take my place, when you get tired of touching my body and seeing my face. Even though my body may be longingly itching to say yes, I am strong enough, not a fool in love enough, to get crazy, entangled in your lustful sex trap. Push me, coax me, don't entice me with material rewards. I am strong enough to say no. Accept it. Just go. My next poem is titled Eye of the Beholder. It was inspired by a painting by a young Jamaican woman, Chandice, whose painting was at the Cecil Cooper Foundation exhibition. Your eyes behold my outer shell. I smile, seem happy. You automatically think I'm doing well. The eye of the beholder can never truly deduce what's going on beneath inside this outer shell. turmoil within, so I smile without, too scared to evoke feelings of pity, feelings of disgust arousing mistrust. I project outward lightness. I project a carefree me. I project a strong woman deep in thought, though emanating from a heart suffering from love sickness, something no one could ever guess. Many internal, external mobbing battles I have fought, won them all destined to never fall. I dictate just what part of me the eyes of the beholder should get to see. My next poem, Love Mask, is inspired by the title of a Brian McFarlane painting, titled What's Behind the Love Mask. I asked him at the exhibition what inspired him to write such a title. He said it's a complicated story. So I wrote a complicated love poem. You speak of love, of loving me wholeheartedly. You smile at me, I believe I see longing in your eyes. I feel your touch, hot fingers burning with a desire, setting my body on fire. Willingly giving your body to me, seeking my reciprocation, as you cover my senses with your overwhelmingly sweet, electrifying love potion. But it seems only temporarily, though I longed for you eternally. Was it all a love mask you were wearing? Something is amiss. I sensed it in your today's morning kiss, so different from yesteryear. I heard it in the way you called my name. I saw it in the way you looked at me as you turned your head away, cutting your eye, not revealing why. Your love is waning, though my love is waxing, though I'm still full, full of yearning. What's behind your love mask? Can it be you are two-timing me? Now I wish my love for you was not so strong enough to make me so weak enough to be so deeply hurt inside that I feel the gut-wrenching pain, sensing, no, now knowing my love for you is all in vain. This hurt will hurt, leaving me in mental agony for months to come after you've gone to the other one. Still, you won't reveal to me why. What's behind your love mask? Why yesterday made love to me so passionately? Then today burst my romantic bubble, leaving my heart in a confused rubble. Was that your selfish parting gift? Flying me sky high in sweet ecstasy unexpectedly, dropping me like a bomb exploding into oblivion. What's really behind your love mask? Who is What really is the personality you have so cunningly, so successfully been fooling me, made a complete fool of me, hidden behind your secret love mask? And I can't even take you to task, as in your secret world happily you bask. Who is what is really behind your love mask? That poem I wrote in one go nonstop. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I save the other poems for the next time I'm back.
All right. Yes, because you will come back. Do you think you were meant to be a poet, Jennifer?
Well, yes. God didn't give me a voice to sing. I love to sing. But at boarding school, I was told to confine my singing to the bathroom. So I guess this is God's way of, saying, okay, I didn't give you the talent to sing, but I've given you the talent to write. So I thank God for that.
Well, what surprises you most about being a poet?
The ideas that I come up with to write poems. Mm-hmm. Because had I not been writing the poems, these thoughts would not have been going through my head the way they do on paper.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. You know, writers and poets write for a myriad of reasons. Some write primarily to speak a message to their audience, while others write because to stay silent is not an option. Jennifer, my friend, why do you write? Why do you continue to write?
I continue to write because things I see, things I hear, things I feel inspire me to write.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw a documentary the other day on NBC.
Yes.
It's about something that happened in 2016. There was a young woman, Kyra. There is now a foundation called Kyra.com, K-I-R-A. Mm-hmm. This woman was in the hospital giving birth to her second child. And the husband noticed that she was bleeding. He called the nurse. Nobody responded. He called the doctors. Nobody responded. When they finally responded after almost an hour, it was too late. She died. A former healthy woman died of hemorrhaging in a hospital. How can that happen in this modern world? And that inspired me to write a poem. I'll let you hear it next time.
All right.
But I'll send it to you by email so you can read
it. Okay. All right, then. Beautiful, beautiful piece. Jennifer, what's next for you? Where do you go from here creatively?
Since I've arrived in Jamaica, I have been taking part in poetry events, and I would like to do more of that in my own native country, because so far I've been doing it in Germany. Years ago, I featured at the New Eureka Poets Cafe. I've done a few open mics there as well, you know. So I want to do more in Jamaica and maybe see if I can publish a book in Jamaica. The first book I did was self-published. It's only available online through Books on Demand, you know, on Amazon as an e-book or ordering it. And all the poems before these last three were from my book. And I would like to see if I get a publisher in Jamaica who would then publish some of the others that are not yet published. But I have quite a lot. So, I mean, I would just have to select a few to put in a book. But self-publishing it is too much work for me. I'm lazy.
Yes. how can the listeners stay in touch with you, my friend?
Okay, they can stay in touch with me via my Instagram page, which is my name, Jennifer M. Garnatz. They can also send me an email at jennifermgarnatz@gmail.com. Those are two ways of getting in touch with me.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You know.
Here's a question for you that's totally off the subject. Is it Caribbean or Caribbean?
Oh, I'm living in Germany so long, I no longer pronounce my English the way it is supposed to be pronounced. But I suppose we say Caribbean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's Caribbean. Okay.
Caribbean, yeah.
Because I say Caribbean, and supposedly that's wrong. So I won't
say it's wrong, but I know that we usually say Caribbean.
Okay, all right.
We're from the Caribbean.
Yes, right. You're from the Caribbean. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, I want to thank you so much for brightening my evening as well as the world's tonight by sharing your work, sharing your perspective on life. I wish you nothing but continued success. I want from this point forward to follow your career. When you have engagements, please let me know. Zoom engagements that I can sit in on, because I just enjoy hearing you share your work.
Okay, I definitely will. And thank you very much from the bottom of my heart for inviting me to be on your radio show. I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed communicating with you.
Well, thank
and
you.
I love your
thank
happy
you.
Voice.
Well, thank you very much. And you contributed to that. You really did. You really did. With 4 minutes to go, we were together.
Okay, good. That's good.
All right. Well, to the listening audience, as I share with you every time we're together, let poetry ring somewhere throughout the land. Take care, Jennifer. Good night.
Take care, Michael. Thank you very much.
Right.
Good night.
Yes.
Bye. Blessings.
Bye. Yes. Blessings.
Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio, is available on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can also check out the website at qlpor.com.